Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 201. And as we start the next 100, after we crossed our 200 milestone last week, we will be bringing you a fantastic guest tonight. And we're looking very much forward to having this guest on the show. We're going to have a great chat. And tonight's co-hosts are, well, this is good news. I thought I was going to be down to just myself and one co-host tonight due to tornadoes in Tennessee. But he has overcome them, evidently. Daniel Dark has just come on the line and is with us despite a power outage just before the show. And then we have, of course, the lovely, the amazing, the vivacious, and wondrous Holly Phillippe
coming at you tonight.
We're under candle power tonight, so.
Hey, you're
candle
used to
powered
that.
Computer. His mobile phone is powered by candles. That's awesome. All right. This is good.
But, so you're having tornadoes?
Yeah.
Tornadoes.
Had one.
Oh, man.
Had one come through a while ago and everything, and don't know whether I've got any more coming through because I have no power in the house anymore. So.
Well, I guess I need to check then, don't I, while we're on here.
Yeah.
Well, I've got my mom. She's
yeah, better keep an eye on that.
I told her, I said, if anything comes through, please let me know.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, I'll get on the old NOAA weather radar here in a minute as soon as my laptop boots up, and I'll see what I can find out.
Yeah, I went to get on earlier and everything on the phone and stuff, and, yeah, it just said, I went on my weather app, and said, we can't give you anything right now. Try back later.
Oh, well.
Well,
where are you when I need you?
I've got a tornado coming through the place, and you can't give me shit.
Oh, my God. What a.
It's like the last time I had a tornado come down through here, me and my wife were sitting on the couch looking out the window, and there was actually white cap waves going down the road. And all of a sudden they come on TV. If you live in this part right here and everything, you know, you need to take shelter right now. Well, that's 5 minutes after the thing has already gone through.
We're late.
Oh, like, my God.
Well, it seems like it's synonymous with podcast. We always have tornadoes on this podcast.
We often do, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy B. Smith can vouch for that. Yeah. He's been on there in the chat room with me when I had one going on just outside the house when they were putting tornado sirens in Lexington were going off one night when I was here. And I think that, yeah, Holly was not in the house that night. I think you were in Indiana that night, actually. It was or something like that. You were out of town.
Yep.
That's
crazy.
Wasn't
here.
So.
Well, I live far enough out of town that we don't have air tornado sirens or anything out here. So, it's, you know, look out your window. If you see a cow fly by, take shelter.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Your roof flies off.
Never
take
a dull
shelter.
Moment. Never a dull moment on the show, that is for sure. Yeah, we even bring you a audio podcast. We bring you tornado adventures. You can't expect more than that. Oh, man. We do, though. We have, I think if you look through the archive, there's been several shows where we've contended with storms and such. And that, you know, that's just part of live live radio, live podcasts. I mean, you just can't predict what's going to happen. It's a, you're not going to always be as polished as the pre-produced podcasts and all that. But you know what? That's what kind of makes it fun some nights. Or at least
never a dull moment.
Adventure.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah, never a dull
moment.
Right
before that. Right before that happened, I had my phone charging up, trying to get a good enough charge to make it through the show tonight. So I don't know whether I'll be on the whole time, but I'm here right now.
Well, we'll do our best.
It's one of those type things where if my phone just says, okay, I'm done, you know, then I'm done, so.
And I'm done.
There he goes.
Well, on the good news, you are completing your first week with a new book out there, Daniel. So, and yeah, you've definitely gotten to walk around with that nice matte finish, cover in your hands for a little bit. And that's got to feel at least that's positive, despite the storms, tornadoes. But yeah, Victim's Tale is out and about.
You know, the first place that I took the book to and everything, you know, sold two copies there, and next place, you know, sold a copy, and next place I sold a copy. I'm like, whatever, you know.
Right.
It may not, you know, I may not have, you know, a million copies sold yet. You know,
but working on it.
Working
on it.
Yeah. Million copies have to start with one, so.
You got it.
That's true. That is true. You've
got
it. And that's awesome.
And
word
of mouth carries far. You put a book in one person's hands.
Yes, it does.
Well, guess what? They're going to refer you to another person who refers you to another person who refers you to another person.
Mm-hmm.
So by selling one book, you can actually sell, tens and tens and tens, you know, thousands even, you know, you just never know.
Well, it's like, you know, one of the
right
guys, his wife and another lady have both gotten copies of Knife's Tale, and they want to start a book club up, and that's going to be the first book or that they're going to, you know, go into.
Amazing.
So,
very cool.
You know,
all right.
I'm going to suggest that they, you know, get both of them and they can read them simultaneously and as they come up to the stories.
Yeah,
and
I had
awesome
somebody ask me today if that was a sequel, and I said, no, it's not the Knife Tale sequel. It's the Victim's Tale. So you can read this without having to read the first one first. You can actually read this and then go read the first one. So I did have somebody ask me that. They're like, I didn't read the first one yet, but I'm reading this one. They had started it. And I'm like, well, go ahead and continue. You'll be just fine. You know? And I said, then you can go back and read Knife's Tale.
Yeah.
It's like the companion book.
Yep.
They're companion books to each other. You know, I suggest people to read the first one, Knife's Tale, first. But if they haven't read Knife's Tale, this is stories that are self-contained that you can enjoy without having to know anything about Knife's Tale.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And and on the book front, we also want to congratulate Carol Preflatish, regular listener to the Star Chamber Show, who just today had a cover reveal for her new book, Homecoming to Murder. And that is a new mystery, start of a new mystery series called Nathan Perry Mysteries. And it's going to be a really, really good release. And the response to the cover was really, really good today. So that's definitely want to send a shout out to Carol.
Nathan Day. Nathan Day Mysteries.
Well, he is a mystery.
Amen.
He might be out there too listening because he listens to the show quite a bit. So so Nathan, if you're listening, we love you too. And who knows, maybe Carol will start another mystery series named after you. You never know. But this one is called the Nathan Perry Mysteries, and it's a I love how the cover turned out, and it's a good looking book, and and definite congrats to her on that. And then among our circle, as far as like announcements tonight, yeah, we have a couple of them. We have a new spotlighted guest from Imaginarium, urban fantasy author, USA Today bestselling urban fantasy author Amy Easterling is coming to Imaginarium. And that is awesome. And, she's got amazing werewolf, several trilogies and series of werewolf novels. So really, really, really good stuff. And looking forward to having Amy joining us. And then as of tonight, right before the show, in fact, we just got the word that New York Times bestselling, USA Today bestselling, legendary fantasy author Richard A. Knack is coming to Imaginarium. And he's a going to be one of our Imaginator guests, and just Age of Conan, Warcraft, I mean, just all kinds of popular franchises that he's written in, including his own Dragon Realms franchise. I mean, I love his novels that have central characters that are minotaurs. I mean, great, great stuff. And Richard is going to be, that's a scoop. It's not been announced publicly yet. Caught the confirmation just before the show. So that's a really bit of good news we can pass along to everybody that Richard will be joining us this summer at Imaginarium. So we got to actually have some cool news to share, which is good. And tonight
Where are you going to be at next?
Me? I actually don't know. We're working on a few things right now. I mean, I honestly have not set appearance dates yet for 2020 as far as finalized any, other than, of course, I'll be at Imaginarium. But I do look to get that unraveled here pretty shortly, and definitely plan to get out there quite a bit, I hope, during the year. But, yeah, I've just been so bogged with all the work on our end that's going on right now. So haven't been able to do too much confirmation work on live appearances, but it's that's just part of what you deal with. But hopefully soon I'll have some good news on that. But we've got two sponsors tonight, and that definitely both are of course regular favorites of ours, regular supporters of the show, and that's Mary Ann Pohl and fantasy author Sandy Lender. And so I know Sandy currently is in an airplane, I believe, from coming back from Hawaii, I think. So she's got a lot of adventures to share with us. Hopefully next week. But tonight she is a sponsor of the show. So here's a little bit about Sandy. Fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. Then, TimelessTeams.com went nuts for the critters in her Dragons in Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. And again, it's Sandy Lender, L-E-N-D-E-R, and look up Sandy's work on Amazon. Great, great stuff. Very high quality writer. And
highly skilled with birds.
Yes, she's an avian expert. Yeah, she knows her stuff. And then we're going to shift to another genre with Mary Ann Pohl. And Mary Ann is just lovely. And it was a great guest last year off too at Imaginarium as well. But let's give you a little bit about her. Raven's Cove, an iconoclast thriller, a supernatural battle for a small Alaska town. Raven's Cove, a town coveted by a sinister enemy, where a frightening legend holds the key to survival. Murder heralds the advancing darkness. A battle will rage. To lose means destruction of the body, annihilation of the soul, and an end to Raven's Cove. Available on Amazon at www.author.maryannpohl.com. And where all good books are sold. Again, that web address is www.author.maryannpohl.com. And Mary Ann Pohl is MaryannPoll. So thank you very much, Mary Ann. You are awesome, and we appreciate you. So there we go. That's our sponsors for the evening. And we're going to have our guests be calling in here in just a moment. And Daniel's still with us, so and we're in pretty good order. Chat room is open,
yeah, Daniel,
folks. So
Daniel
feel free
does
to...
have a signing. Daniel does have a signing this weekend.
Yep. This weekend. Cool.
I'll
mention
be
that.
At the,
mention that.
The Mac in Murfreesboro, the Murfreesboro Anime Comic Con on Saturday the 8th from 10 to 5. So, and probably be doing a lecture while I'm there too on writing. So.
Very cool. Cool. Yeah, that's
I'm glad you
clarified.
You are a college expert now, so see, you're
yes.
going to be able to do more of these.
Yeah, you could also give a lecture.
Yeah.
I've given more lectures at colleges than I have classes at college.
Well, he can give a lectures on obscure bourbons that taste like scotch. So there you go. That's another area he could star in, but.
The bourbon drinkers that were professed bourbon drinkers don't know what bourbon tastes like is not my problem.
Uh-huh.
I did
yeah,
my
very
job.
Funny. No, they taste like scotch. They did. But I am personally excited about tonight's guest. She has actually, we've known her before from, she's been a vendor at Imaginarium, and a lot of folks that I know have worked with her. She's got a great editing and writing coach, author coach service called Top Shelf Editing, and heard a lot of good things from a lot of people about it. And so I've been wanting to get her on the show, and she is coming in here in just a moment. But I wanted to give you a nice little background on her before bringing her on the show. She also has a brand new podcast, Write Your Best, that features authors, a really good new writing podcast. She is also an author, and I'm really looking forward to talking tonight about her works, suspense thriller author. She's got the Flesh and Blood trilogy and several other titles, and a very multifaceted creative, as we mentioned in our promotions. And so I'm happy to bring you somebody that's actually – from our hometown here in Lexington, Kentucky, I'm bringing onto the show live right now. Turning her mic on, we introduce you to Christina Kay. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show.
Hi there, guys. How are you doing?
Hello.
How
are
you?
We're still live.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Daniel's getting blown away.
Down.
He's having tornadoes.
Yeah.
I've been hearing my neighborhood. Storm thing going off around here, so I'm like, oh, that's just great timing.
Oh man, so you've got one too.
Yeah.
Well, you can't be that far away from
that.
Where I am right now, because we're both in central Kentucky here, so I better be keeping an eye out myself or ear out.
Yeah, I'm watching.
I have two built-in alarms in my dog, which they may go off any moment now. So you'll have to pardon me if the dogs start barking.
Well, your bio also said that you have, and I quote from your bio, a very fat cat. So does the cat give you alerts as well on storms or?
No, he doesn't do much of anything. No, he's a big
old boy. He just stretches.
He might twitch his ears a little bit if he hears something. If we're lucky, we may get that out of him. Yeah, he's
nice.
A big old boy.
Nice. Well, we've got two very little ones now that we just adopted. They were a bonded pair of siblings, and we wanted to make sure they stayed together. So right now we've got two little ones, but one of them we think will eventually become a big old boy. He's got a burly kind of build to him
already.
Yeah,
he's a burly boy. So if you hear me, you know, getting that, they tend to get into things. They're 9 months old, and whew, they're wearing mama down, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I hear that.
Yeah, they are energetic. I am excited to have you on the show. It's so weird. It's like we always talk about my friend Jason Sizemore. He lives in Lexington. I never get to see him here. It always is running into him at events or at Imaginarium or whatever when we actually get to see each other. And of course, tonight, you know, of course, you are also in Central Kentucky. And you know, if it isn't on the show or at Imaginarium, you know, this kind of seems like, you know, this is where we, you know, get to interact with you. So
exactly.
So that's kind of one of those strange things. But I definitely am excited to have you on the show, because lots of folks that I know speak very highly of the quality of work you do. And we'll start, you know, I want to get into all the phases of everything you do, because you're very multifaceted. But we'll start with top shelf editing, because you know, a lot of people that I have a lot of respect for, and you know, including, you know, the one person I just mentioned, Sandy Lender, just worked with you, in fact, and that's with your top shelf editing, your author coach and editing service. So I'd like to just start there and give folks a little background on top shelf editing, and then we'll get the discussion rolling here.
Sure. I've actually been freelance editing for almost 10 years, and then last September I decided that I wasn't quite happy with just freelancing and I wanted to build an empire. So I decided that I was going to build my brand, rebrand my business and build it up a little bit. And so September of 2019, I launched Top Shelf Editing, and just kind of hit the ground running. I hired a staff of a couple of editors, interns, and a virtual assistant, and a marketing rep, and people like that. And we've just really been pleased with how things have turned out. But currently, you know, it's been going since September, so what, 5 months or so? And we're just now getting to the point where we are kind of having to turn away some work, unfortunately, which is a good problem to have. But, you know, it's great. We offer, you know, basic editing services, line and copy editing and content editing, but we also do author coaching. We do that, which you get, like you said, I did work with Sandy Linder recently on that. So yeah, that's kind of the history of top shelf editing and how we got to where we are today. And then, you know, like you mentioned, we recently branched off and did a podcast, which is actually called Write Your Best Book. I wanted to correct that really quickly. It's Write Your Best Book, and it's
Sorry if I made a mistake.
That's okay. That's fine.
Write Your Best.
We want to make sure people can find it.
Yeah, we might. Yeah, it might have been when we, because I always like to, we like to copy and paste the titles over, and I might have just missed that book part.
Because
I know you had it in all caps. But yeah, I noticed that. That's an author interview type show, right? Or what kind of stuff you do on your podcast?
Yeah, it's not just authors, though. I've been really blessed. I just kind of rolled the dice, and I started reaching out to some huge influencers in the author world, like Derek Murphy from The Creative Indie. He's been on the show. I've got Jane Friedman. She's been on the show. Angela Ackerman, Jerry B. Jenkins. I mean, I've not heard a no from anyone that I've asked. So I've been really blessed.
Very good.
We've got influencers and coaches and editors and agents and publishers. So a little bit, I'm trying to spice it up each week.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm very excited to see that too. I mean, that's a great addition to your arsenal there. And how many episodes are you in? Because you've got a few up right now, correct?
Yeah, we are five in, and episodes, they launch every Friday or drop every Friday, whatever terminology you want to use. So this Friday, episode 6 will come out. Yes.
Very nice.
So we're scheduled out. We're booked out through September right now with guests. So.
Nice.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So are you enjoying it so far as far as the podcasting and whatnot?
I am enjoying it. It's a whole new world for me. If you go back just 3 months ago, I couldn't have told you the first thing about podcasts alone, let alone how to run one. But I just dove in and learned it, and here we are.
Right. Well, they can be very fun, unless, like I was saying in the early part of the show, when you do a live one, sometimes you get curveballs thrown at you that you cannot expect.
I don't
know,
make it fun.
Tornadoes or this. Or something, but
you just never know.
So it does get to be an adventure, but it is fun. I mean, there is definitely an upside to it, and it's like what we found. It's great to actually get to talk with somebody like you, you know, and get to spend some time, you know, exploring, you know, a creative's world and spotlighting them, and you know, and raising awareness for them, and in a way that they can, you know, use it in like, you know, of course, stream downloading later and use it for their press kits
right.
and everything. But it's a, but yeah, it's definitely got a lot of positives, I think. And that's why I think it's great to see other people step forward like yourself to do quality podcasts. And it's one of the things I like about you in particular is you are very focused on quality. And I responded to one of your tweets recently, which is a very good one. Cause like, that's one of the things that we kind of pound on the show here. And I lament watching a lot of stuff out there in the very flooded market that just kind of gets flung up there in all the different phases of the book world. And it's nice to see, you know, some people that really are focused on producing good work. You know, whether it's, you know, your editing, your coaching, your podcast, then, you know, like I said, we're going to get into talking to you about your writing. But it's good to see somebody that's got that kind of focus. Yeah, quality.
Yeah,
and doing good
work. I appreciate to hear that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and that's not just me saying it. I mean, that's definitely a lot of people
yeah.
I respect and talk to that feel that way about you. But it's cool. And I noticed that. Yeah, I was suspecting that you have a lot of volume going on at Top Shelf because I do talk to. Yeah, yeah. So maybe you have to train the cat to kind of like at least doing some copycat editing. So
yeah, get some use like out that. Of the fat guy.
Right. What's a typical day for you like now with all the different facets? Do you have a certain routine for the creative side, the work side, the marketing side? How's it flowing for you lately?
You know, it's funny that you ask that, because I'll freely admit I'm an adult living with ADD. So you would not think being, you know, an entrepreneur that would be a good fit. But it, the way that I get through the day is basically I had to hire staff. Like I said earlier, I've got a virtual assistant who kind of keeps me in check. And I don't really have a set schedule, honestly. I kind of spend, you know, part of the day, mostly day, though, I do spend doing the actual editing or my one-on-one coaching with clients. Evenings, I'm usually spending, you know, recording podcast episodes, focusing on the marketing for my business, writing guest blog posts. Like, I just got put up on Jane Friedman's blog in January. I'm going to be on Kay Weiland's blog next Monday. I'm going to be on Joanna Penn's blog in April. So I do a lot of writing, like guest posts and guest, you know, articles
Very
and things
cool.
like that. So that kind of thing comes in the evening. But honestly, I have to give a little shout out, an unpaid sponsorship to this little, it's an app called Asana. And I don't know how many of you have heard of it, but it is this great tool for like task reminders for business owners. And I couldn't get through the day without it. I just couldn't. It's really great for reminders.
What's it called?
It's called Asana, A-S-A-N-A. It's a free,
okay.
And I think it's like anything. You could pay for bigger things, but the basic
right,
thing is
right.
free. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's
wow.
great. It helps you, like, you can assign, like, if you have a staff, you can create a task and assign it to a certain person and then give them a due date, and you can check up on the staff. It's really cool. So that gets us through
That's
the
handy.
Day.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think we may have to follow up and find out more about that, because, God, Holly
yeah.
and I mean, it's nonstop for us right now. I mean,
yeah.
between
sure.
Imaginarium, the press, the convention, you know, everything like that, and the podcast
sure.
and writing, and I mean, it's just like, well, you know how it is. It's just,
yeah,
yeah, you have to keep track of everything that's on the grid. I mean, it's tough, yeah, when you have so many
yeah,
variables. But that's why another reason I have a lot of respect for you, because you are tackling quite a bit, and yeah, to keep all that kind of herd the cats, so to speak. It's like
yeah,
it's just
yeah,
tough
right.
to keep it all
yeah,
in order.
He's popping back
yeah.
up here.
When
yeah.
do you find time to write?
You know, mm-hmm. it's sad to say I don't lately. I miss it. I have a book that I'm working on, and that working on is probably a very loose term to use for that. I maybe get a chapter or two written a week now if I'm lucky. I used to knock out a book in 6 to 8 weeks, but I don't.
Wow.
I mean, that's the honest answer. I don't have time to write, and I do miss it. I'm hoping, though, I'm launching an online course to add something else to my list. I'm launching a digital course in March, and I'm hoping that, and that's kind of a way to make some residual kind of background income, and I'm hoping that will maybe free up a little bit of my time and I can get back to writing some more.
Yeah, because you
that's
have good reviews. I mean, I checked out your books, and, and I mean, you like your Flesh and Blood trilogy. I mean, let's see, your titles like Presumed Dead and Confessions of an Old Lady. I mean, you have several titles on here. The covers look good. I mean, your reviews look excellent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got a nice little body work growing there as an author. So yeah, definitely encourage you to. Yeah, pursue that too. Yeah, it looks good.
I know. I need to put more time in it, and I need to actually do what I tell all my clients, which is set 30 minutes aside every day to write, just 30 minutes. And
mm-hmm.
if you
mm-hmm.
and I don't practice what I preach because I don't have time for it, but for most people, it's true. If you'll set aside, just set a timer, and give yourself 30 minutes to write, then in all likelihood, at the end of that 30 minutes, you don't want to stop. You want to keep going, but. Yeah, I do need to practice what I preach a little more. So, but I've been writing a little more this past 2 weeks, so I'm trying to make some more time for it.
Good.
Yeah, because we definitely, tonight we wanted to make sure we spotlighted your writing because I know that, we're very familiar with your editing and writing coach services, but I want to make sure our audience knows that you yourself are an author and that you do have, a number of titles out. And, Amazon's got even a box set option. I think for like $5.99 currently. So that's a really good deal.
They were free. They were free recently for a little while. My publisher had them because those are all published through a traditional publisher, a small one, but a traditional publisher nonetheless. Mm-hmm. So they do a lot of those the pricing and the as far as the covers and goes, they chose those covers for me, but. But, yeah, I appreciate it. It's actually very encouraging to hear those kind of things. It makes me want to, as soon as we get off the phone, pick up my laptop and start writing again. So,
well, there you go.
That's what we hope we do. That's what we strive to do. We want to get you recharged and go.
Yes,
but it sounds like you've definitely got a energizer source of your own to tackle all the work you do. I mean, that's quite a lot. But we know how that goes, right, Holly?
Yep.
Oh yes.
When you're dealing with creatives, you get contacted at weird hours at all hours.
All hours.
Early
24
morning, late night.
7.
Yeah.
Oh
yep.
yeah.
It gets that way. It gets that way. And I'll turn you over to Daniel a little bit here because like I said, your writing and so forth goes a little bit into some of his territory because he's steeped into thrillers, suspense elements. Of course, his goes more into full on horror elements and stuff with Jack the Ripper style Victorian era fiction. But as far as like writing discussion, I think we can. We can get a little bit of fun here. Daniel, go ahead, man.
Let's do it.
You do coaching on a regular basis for a first-time person that's never had a coach. Where are you going to start with them?
Depending on where they are in their journey, as far as the very first thing, a lot of authors I have found struggle with even just deciding on a story idea. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to clients or authors and they're like, I've got 3 or 4 stories going on at once and I don't know which one to pick. So that's the first thing we do, if that's where they're at, is help them focus on a story. Like, let's see which one is more developed in your mind. Which one can you see play like a movie in your head? And we help focus on a story. That's the first step. Once we do that, or if they already have decided on their one story, we just basically start, honestly, I used to be a pantser, and I call myself a both now. I'm both. I still like to kind of fly by the seat of my pants in some regards, but once I personally, and this is just for me, once I discovered plotting, I notice a huge change in a good way in my writing. So I do encourage my clients to, if not, you don't have to map out, you know, every single scene of every single chapter, but I do encourage them to at least break it down into your three acts. You know, how does your book start? What's your climax? What happens in the middle? What happens at the end? You know, break down those basic three parts of the story. Or there's the hero's journey I've been a big fan of recently, which some
right.
people are familiar with, some are not, but I've become a big fan of it. And it's more like a 12-step plotting theme, plotting platform. But we just basically get all the characters. I ask them to do character sketches of the characters that they have in mind. Now, this is all before they start writing word one in their setting. And so that's why with the online course that I'm actually working on, I was working on before I joined this call today, I've broken it down to the three modules. And the first one is before you write, the second one is as you're writing, and the third one is after you write. So as far as when I first start coaching, to answer your question, that's the very first few things we want to do is get everything nailed down. Again, you don't have to plot every single scene. I don't need you to do that, but you do need to have an idea of what direction you're headed in.
Yeah, if you don't know where the story's going at all, then, you know, even the most drastic pantser normally knows where that story to end at.
Some idea.
I mean, I have people get really adamant about, no way am I ever going to plot. I'm an absolute pantser. And that's fine. And you can be a pantser. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to talk people into becoming plotters or outliners. But I do think that you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice if you don't have some sort of, like you said, general direction at least of where your book is headed.
Right.
Have an idea of your ending at least. Where's your character going? What's the theme of your story? You know, just what's the goal of the book? What do you want from this book? Are you going to publish it? Are you going to get an agent? What do you want to do? You know, those things definitely need to be thought about before you even start writing.
Do you also work with people on screenplays and stuff like that, or are you just working strictly with book right now?
I will admit, I don't know. No, I don't know much about screenplays. I'll be the first to admit. I have one or two clients on screenplays, and I just edited it in general, but I don't claim to be an expert in that. That's one facet of the writing world that I have just not gotten into.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, it's just everybody has their strong points, their weak points, and identifying the fact that you can identify it is very respectable.
I've been approached by a couple. I've helped a couple friends with them because they're friends. But if somebody comes at me as a potential client with a screenplay, I just tell them, you know, that's just not something I'm a specialist at. But I do know some people that I can refer them out to, so I do that.
Very good. Very good.
Well, since you're in Lexington, we'll have to get you to hang out at. We'll have to get her to hang out at Holly at ISA Third Thursdays, so she can meet a whole truckload of screenwriters to network with. Yeah,
there you go.
I thought you were going to say hang out at Brewburger.
No. we don't want to have ketchup dumped on her. I don't know if you ever heard that story, Christina, but Daniel got ketchup dumped on him back-to-back at Brewburger here in Lexington. So, he avoids that place. Yep.
And he wrote a book on ketchup.
Yeah, plus he wrote a book on ketchup, so go figure. Yeah.
So that was the ironic hilariousness of it all.
That does make it pretty funny.
Daniel didn't find it amusing.
No, I would say he didn't. I would not find it funny either.
The first time I got really pissed, the second time I was just like, I can't believe this.
The first time he went speechless, and I actually did the talking, because here you got Daniel, who dresses like Jack the Ripper every single day, and he stands up. And he's just speechless, and I'm like, uh-oh. So, I did the talking.
She was a diplomat.
Speechless.
And Holly's not known as the diplomat.
Not to talk. Because whatever came out of my mouth would not have been pretty at the time.
No.
Oh, I bet.
No, and
it would have been
that.
Colorful, but it would not have been pretty.
No. But well, just to reassure you, yeah, the ISA Third Thursdays that we do in Lexington are not at that establishment. They are at Joseph
no.
S.
Okay,
Bronte
not,
Bistro.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yes.
Good
yeah,
deal.
So
no
you can so you can go to
okay, good deal.
No,
and,
no,
I, no, you and I'm sure you know Joseph Beth very well. And that's a wonderful
yeah,
place.
Yeah.
But
the
yeah.
Bronte Bistro is awesome.
Yeah, I've done
yeah,
some
so we'll,
book signings and things out of Joseph Beth. It's been a while, but yeah, I've done those.
Very cool. Yeah, because that's a nice place. But go ahead, Daniel.
It's
you
nice
were about to say, but I want to
go ahead.
Yes.
I was just going to say they're a great store, and they support the local author community very well over there at Joseph Beth.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
yes, they do.
Okay.
Go ahead,
okay.
Daniel.
Okay, so I come to you as a new client and everything. We've nailed down the story. We know exactly what, you know, what the story is going to be about. We have done a pre-outline. And then I tell you, I'm stuck. I can't figure out what to do next.
Mm-hmm. What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that I typically will do it with the coaching, now this is different than if they've already written the full book and they hand it over, but if we're coaching and they get stuck, honestly, I've not run into that very many times because here's what we do. We do a lot of brainstorming. The client and I, so there's almost no room to get stuck because I don't know how you guys are, but when I get writer's block or I get stuck, it may not be as big as writer's block, but I may be stuck on a certain scene or something. Usually if I'll contact an author friend or anybody that has a creative mind and I just kind of spitball what it is I'm stuck on, they'll talk me through it. And that's almost always, I don't know if I've ever not gotten out of writer's block doing that. And so I've, usually when my clients come to me and they say, okay, I've written 3 chapters, but I don't know what to do next, we just talk it out. I'm like, okay, where are you going? You know, where? So you're here, you're at point A, and you need to get to point C. So let's figure out what point B is. Let's figure out how we move your character from this scene to where you want them to go next. And let's think of some ideas. How would they react? How would they, you know, what would this character do to naturally make it to point C? You know, it's hard to, without an exact example, but what we do is I'll tell the client, okay, go, now that we've developed the story idea, we've picked out all the things that we do initially, then I'll tell them, okay, go write 3 chapters. And then when you're done writing those 3 chapters, send them to me and don't write anything else. And so that's kind of how that works. And usually we avoid, honestly, any major sticks or, you know, any holes by doing it that way.
Okay.
I think a lot of times by having somebody to talk to about it, that's why I personally, if I was doing it on the author side again, I would go through the coaching rather than doing it, writing a whole book and then having an editor, because it's an invaluable asset to be able to have someone, not just a creative mind, but someone that also knows, not to toot my horn, but, you know, who knows how to write a book and structure a book and everything to walk you through those times when you are a little bit stuck. So
right.
That's why I love the author coaching. And the author coaching has slowly started to kind of edge out the editing a little bit in my business lately.
Okay.
Oh, very cool.
I'm asking you these questions because I'm drumming up business for you. So
drum away, buddy, drum away.
Because in my opinion, if somebody knows how you work your business, how
yeah,
you personally address things, they're going to be more apt to come to you if they know that they think they can get along with you and you're not going to try to change your book for them.
Well,
and
that's a big thing. I'm glad you said that about changing the book. That's one fear. I posted on Facebook last week sometime, and I just posted a general, very basic question. Why haven't you or why won't you work with an editor? Do you know that post went viral? Of any post I've ever put on Facebook, I have never had anything go viral. It went viral. My phone was blowing up. My computer was blowing up. But, you know, the majority of the answers were, I don't trust them, I can't afford them, and I don't need them. But I also got a lot
What
of,
the world?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you would be
I can understand the second one.
Yeah.
And I can sort of understand the first one. The last one.
The trust they say is because they've been ripped off in the past, which I get.
I understand.
You know, I don't trust them. I can't afford them, which, you know, not all editors are as expensive as they think. I certainly am not. And then number three was I don't need them. And they just think I'm a good writer.
Right.
I can do it myself. No, you can't. Here's why
you cannot.
Our brains are not built that way. Our brains will actually, it's called brain mapping. What it will do is it will fill in the words that should be there, not the words that are there.
Yep.
So
exactly.
If you have written a sentence and you have left out a word, guess what your brain does? Your brain reads that word. It doesn't recognize that you left it out. So people get really up in arms about it, but I get right up in arms with them. I'm like, no, listen, you can't edit yourself. You can self-edit to a degree.
And you should self-edit to a degree. But
with my last book,
I have done readings out of that book, and there was one word in there that I have read correctly that was incorrect in the book. And read it, I don't know how many times, probably hundreds of times I had read that word correctly, but it was wrong in the book. And my editor found the word for me. And I'm sitting there looking at it where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, Daniel thought I was wrong at first because he's like, no, I read that word a million times. And then he went and looked. He's like, oh, I did miss it. Yeah.
It's true.
To address your question about, you know, how, what was it? You said something about, you know, what was the question? I just had it and I lost it. But, like how it's better to know how someone works, you know, and you're more apt to work with them.
Yeah.
I do free phone consultations all the time. And that's because I have learned that if I talk to you one-on-one, kind of like we're doing now, you're going to, A, trust me more because you get to know me a little bit. B, you can ask me questions instead of me just being some person on a page on a website with a dollar amount next to it. You can actually talk to me and I can explain to you. And 9 times out of 10, when I do free phone consultations, it turns into a client relationship. So it is very beneficial to be able to do that. But that's why I even have a calendar app that people can just go on my calendar app and schedule a 30-minute consultation with me. They don't even have to ask. It's just, as long as I'm available, they can have it. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Very cool.
So that's the whole reason I was sitting there asking you the questions is because people need to know who you are, not just what you do, but who you are. And how you're actually doing what you're doing. And with me as a, you know, say I was going to be a client of yours, I would want to know that, first of all, you're not going to sit there and try to, you know, not really on a trust issue, but you're not really going to sit there and try to take over my story.
Oh, that's what you were saying that I was going to address. I'm glad you said that again. That is a big concern. When I posted that's I got up on the post and forgot about everything else. But one of the other main feedbacks, aside from those main three, was people saying, I don't want someone to come in and change my voice. I don't want someone to come in and change my story. I've written it the way I've written it, and that's the way it is. I get that concern, and I think as an author I can identify with that concern. However, and there may be editors who might push you to do that, but honestly, the way I work anyway, I'm not going to – now, I may make a suggestion. I may say to you, you know, this voice is not very distinct from the other voice. You need to add, you know, some characterization or something unique about this particular character. Or I may say your theme is lacking. You need to kind of underpin your theme a little bit in your story. I may make suggestions, but I am never going to tell an author – oh, you need to totally overhaul that, and you need to change that, and this doesn't work. All I'm doing is making suggestions based on years of training and experience and, you know, publishers I've worked for and literary agents I've worked for and all this I've done, I'm just giving you suggestions. It's up to the author ultimately in the end, and I'm never going to push anybody to do something.
Well,
sometimes
authors need to know that this doesn't work.
Yeah, it's not.
You need to start with right. this word right here and
right.
change everything else.
Yeah.
Yes, just
right.
because it makes
that's
sense to you doesn't mean it's going to make sense to the reader.
Right. Well, you know, I think a lot of authors are very, just like any art form, are very sensitive about their work. It's very dear
they
to
are.
Them.
Yeah,
and I get it. I'm an
yeah,
author
relate.
Too. I get it.
Right.
But you gotta, you have to be willing to take not even criticism, but just feedback. You have to listen
right.
to people, whether it's a beta reader or an editor or, I don't know, any fellow author, whatever it is. You have to listen. If someone is telling you, this just doesn't work for me as a reader, you've got to take, there's got to be some merit in that. You got to understand that you may love it, and to you it
right.
may make sense. But to that person reading it, it's just not cutting it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, in those instances, I will tell them very strongly, you know, hey, look, this is just, it's not working, you know. But even in those instances, I always try to be kind. I always try to be, you know, as gentle as I can because I know as an author, being an author myself, and I can go back 10 years or so ago when I first wrote my first book and remember how insecure I felt and remember how worried I was that my publishing company or my editor or somebody was going to totally change my book. I remember all those feelings. So I keep all that in mind. I try
yeah.
to anyway.
Yeah. But you've also mm-hmm. seen the thing where somebody, you know, puts about three times more information in there than what's needed
yeah.
for the story.
Yeah, that's a
and
that's
you
a,
said and you said
the
yeah.
info dump.
Why
yes.
why do you have this in here? Well, I
yeah.
need it to explain the story. Do you?
Yeah, don't need all that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you really? You know, does
yeah.
somebody need to know how, you know, to build a nuclear reactor to enjoy a spy movie?
Yeah.
Right.
No, we don't need to know that.
Right.
No. Yeah, the famous
that's
info dump, yes.
Well, yeah,
yeah.
It is, you know, and sometimes, yeah, I mean, it's good to, you know, throw little facts here and there, but if it
oh,
doesn't
sure.
relate to the story, then you don't need it in there. I'm sorry. If it doesn't relate
yeah.
or it's not pertinent, it doesn't need to be there, you know.
I'll give you a very good example of that. I did an edit one time, and this has been a long time ago, and I would never call out by names, but just in general, I did an edit, and the bless her heart, the author – the first almost the entire first chapter was a description of a bird chasing a crab across the sand in the beach and trying to catch the crab. And then finally I had to contact the author and be like, what genre is this book? What genre is this? And she's like, oh, it's a thriller. And I thought, okay, well, I don't need to know
yeah.
for 7 pages why the seagull is chasing the crab, because that's got nothing to do with, I mean, I hadn't even met the protagonist yet, 8 pages in. So,
it may have been an animated, you know, thriller, where the
yeah.
seagull and the crab.
Yeah, the bird and the crab. But info dumps are very common mistakes among authors. And even I catch myself
mm-hmm.
every now and then. I have to back
right,
away.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, oh, wait, I'm going too far with that. That's slow down.
Yep. Yep. Reel it back. That's why I always tell them, you know, reel it back
yep.
just a little bit.
Reel it back.
Reel it back.
Yep.
You haven't
I'll
told
tell
me
you
that
what.
Yeah.
Well, one author. Well, I do want to give an example of an author that works a heck of a lot of cool info into the book without it being an info dump, and that's Steve Alton, who does the Meg novels. If you know the Jason Statham movie that was popular, came out about a year ago or so,
okay.
Big Shark.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, but his Meg novels, I mean, are about deep sea, a lot of deep sea elements, and about the trenches and the deep sea environments and stuff.
Right.
And he works a lot of really cool oceanography into his story, but it's done in such a way that it's not dumped, but it's sprinkled mm-hmm. throughout the story. And by the time you get through, you're like, wow, I learned a lot.
Sprinkled. Sprinkles
are good. But he's a good example of one that does it well.
Do you grow a flower by putting it in a flood, or by watering it, over the season?
True. And Daniel, that's you sprinkle. See, you don't fat dump everywhere. Yeah, you sprinkle.
No. Yeah. You're definitely
I'm
not an info dump guy.
But anything.
but that's good though, Daniel, because if Christina. Yeah, she gets to know you more, she'll realize this. But you're an encyclopedia of the Victorian era, but you don't just dump everything. you don't just dump everything into your work. You do sprinkle more than I think that's you're another example of that, because you come from a wealth of knowledge in that area.
Well, I could dump a bunch of stuff in there, but like I said, do you need, say I was talking about a carriage, do you need to know every bolt that's in that carriage, or do you need to know it's this type of carriage?
Right.
If somebody's curious about what that type of carriage is, they can go look it up.
Right.
And say, okay, this is what he was riding in, or, whatever.
Right.
But you don't need to know, that it had a fifth wheel type design and, everything like
how
that
many
with the carriage.
It had and all that.
You just need to know that it had horses in front of it, and the horses were running, and the carriage was being pulled behind it.
There you go.
Very common issue I think a lot of authors struggle with. So.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you get the writing, and you're seeing it play out in your head. And so you're putting it on the paper, and
right.
if you don't reel that in, you're gonna derail.
Right.
Well, what in your view, Christina, are the biggest mistakes being made by today's writers? What are some of the,
most common
things that you see that writers today are making and problems with? Yeah, craft.
The craft.
Okay. Honestly, I
yeah, not crabs, craft.
Yeah, not crabs. We're past the crabs. Okay. In the craft, one of the biggest ones that popped in my head as soon as you asked that question was head hopping. A lot of authors are having trouble understanding point of view and assigning point of view within a scene or a chapter to certain characters. And the hard thing about that is it's not even really an easy thing to explain either. So the best advice I give authors is just, when I'm in Bob's scene or chapter, however you choose to do it, but when I'm in Bob's scene, I can't know what Susan thinks, feels, wants, desires, needs, observes, experiences, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing I think that authors, especially newer authors, struggle with a lot is, and there go the dogs.
it's okay.
Another very, very common issue is they struggle with tenses, especially switching between tenses. This is, again, with newer authors.
Yes.
In one sentence they may have everything in past tense, and then either they'll go to the other extreme and go into present tense completely in the same paragraph. It's a lot of people don't have a grasp of staying in that tense, or they don't understand past perfect and how to use past perfect, and those are very common mistakes. Those are the top two I see probably more frequently than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would have to say that. Those are the most common
right.
I see recently as far as just the craft because here's why I think that is. I think that it's a growing trend, in my opinion, in fiction to include multiple points of view, especially when you're writing in my genre, which is suspense and thrillers. It is increasingly popular to show the villain's POV.
Right.
and maybe even the victims, you know, but, you know, minimum of three characters is very common lately. And then in romance, you've got the modern trend of the dual POV between the protagonist and her love interest. And that's fine. I mean, those are great. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think that since that's a more recent modern thing, that a lot of authors are trying to write that way, but they don't understand that you have to keep each character in their zone, for lack of a better term, and in their own head.
Right.
I think that's why that's happening.
Right.
Yeah, it gets really confusing, especially during editing. You have to go back, and I know I've reread paragraphs, you know, several times, just keep going back and think, what is going on, you know, and then I have to scroll up. What, you know, no, this is not working. You should not be here.
And imagine what it's like for the reader who doesn't have the advantage of scrolling back up or asking the author,
that's
what
it.
Do they mean here? Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, they're like, what, you know, and then, yeah, that totally puts them out of the zone.
And the other thing about it, as a author and everything, you've got to realize that most people that are reading your book are not English majors.
True.
True.
You know, they can't see past what you're writing and say,
Right, right. They can't look into it deeply and say, oh, I see what he's doing with the past tense of this and the past perfect of this, and yet they don't get all that. So it really messes them up, and it messes up the flow.
Yeah. And and who wants to anyway? You don't read for that to analyze, and not fiction anyway. You read it for entertainment, you know. So who wants to even take the time to try to figure it out? And if an author, if a reader gets frustrated because they don't understand who's who and who's saying what, guess what they're going to do? They're going to put the book down.
Right.
And so, but you
That's
know,
true.
You just made me think of another when you said that most readers are not, you know, literature majors or whatever. You just made me think of a third very common mistake that I see trending with authors lately is verbosity. It's like, trying very hard. Like, I think a lot of authors, especially new ones, feel like they have to impress everybody with their, you know, extensive vocabulary. You know, and they've
oh my god,
and
yes,
yeah, and use the biggest flowery words and describe everything very flowery, and use these big dialogue tags that are, you know, she pontificated. No, she didn't. She said. You know what I mean? Like, you know, very. I think a lot of authors just honestly feel, because they're new, I think, feel like they have to impress everybody and show them what a good writer they are. And I know these big words, and I know how to, okay, well, that's very impressive, and yay for you. But the reader, like you said, is not most of the time, it's not going to be like a literature major or a PhD in, you know, writing or whatever it is. They're just reading for the experience. They're reading for the story. And they don't want to stumble upon these big words.
Yep, because then you have to stop and look them up.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not to say readers are ignorant. That's not what I'm saying. That's not to say that at all. But it's just not why we read. Unless you're reading some deep-thinking work of literary fiction or, you know, some philosophical book. In all reality, and most of the times, if you're reading a contemporary fiction or even a historical fiction or whatever it may be, you're reading for entertainment. That's all.
Right. You don't need, you know, these obscure words that we never use in normal speech.
Right. And that's exactly what I tell my clients is don't write like you think you need to write. Write the way you talk. Write the way you talk as if you're talking to a friend. You know, you wouldn't sit down for coffee with a friend and use all that kind of language. You wouldn't say that. So why are you having your characters do it?
No, because most generally your friend's going to go, what? What is that? Yeah.
What'd you say?
What?
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
Most time my friends would just sit there and smack me if I did.
Well, there's one reaction.
What the hell's wrong with you, boy?
You've had too much to drink.
Yeah.
Leave those damn flowery words for your damn books.
That's it.
Yeah, but I do think there's a balance there, because sometimes people can just use the same kind of phrasing over and over and over again, though. And so, yeah,
you
there
don't
is
want
a,
to redo.
There is a fine
you don't
line,
want to
or you want to
be repetitive.
Balance, a little bit of balance, yeah.
Right.
Not to where she, like she said, you know, where no, she didn't. I love that, pontificated. No, she said. Yes, I know. Yeah, perfect way to explain that. But yeah, sometimes yeah, a little nuance can you know, like I said,
yeah,
make a,
sure.
A phrase
that's
you know,
where
better
a thesaurus
and so forth.
Comes in handy. A thesaurus
yeah.
Well,
comes in handy.
Yeah, exactly
yes.
Right.
And actually, in the chat room, Bob has chimed in here and said, "Yeah, he said readability and flow is essential." So yeah, so
yep.
We do have agreement
ah,
from the chat room at the
point.
Moment.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Readability and flow. I like that.
That is. I like
yep.
that, too.
I say that a lot when I'm editing. I'm telling you, know, this here is stopping the flow. Or this is,
yeah.
you know, you're
yes.
going to bring your reader to a halt here. You're going to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, I've used that a lot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some
that
helpful
is.
Hints.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Because I think the biggest problem facing the market right now is just there's such a flood of a material that you know has not been vetted, and it really needs
right.
the writing coach, the editor, and I think it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's definitely and we talk about it a lot on the show, but we call it the white noise, you know, and it makes it so hard for the authors that do their
else.
Homework and do the process right to get it. To get noticed, you know, among that flood of just volume. And it's, you know, and it does, you know, readers definitely get turned off of indie authors when they have a bad experience, and it makes them less inclined to try an indie author out when they are shopping on Kindle or
well,
somewhere
and
else.
And it gives all other indie authors kind of a bad name. You know,
it
makes people generalize it. Because I've heard people say, oh, I would never read indie books. And people don't know, you know, that's just sad because there are some
mm-hmm.
indie
yep.
authors who would blow some of these traditional authors out of the water.
Oh,
yes.
But,
yeah,
know,
I could give you a list. Yeah.
I could too. I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that what I try to tell people when they're hesitant about working with a professional, whether it's for an editor or a cover designer or whatever the case may be, indie authors, when I talk to them, I'm saying, look, what you're doing, it's an investment in your book's future and in your career, because I don't have the stats on this, but I have read many times that authors who will invest in a professional editor and or cover designer not only get back the money they put in, they get it then some, and they also will avoid those scathing. I mean, everybody's going to get a bad review every now and then. We all know it happens. It happens often.
Oh yeah.
But you're not going to. You will avoid a bunch of really horrible scathing reviews because people will tear into you over not having your book edited. I mean, I've seen pretty brutal reviews because people just,
yep.
you know, a fifth grader could have written this better or whatever the case may be, and they'll do it. They'll say it. So save yourself some pain and effort. Sure, it's a little bit of money out of your pocket up front, but you're going to make it back most likely if you put
right.
the time and effort and energy into making sure that whatever that looks like, whoever it may be, just put the time mm-hmm. and effort and energy into your books if you're an indie author for the reader, because that's
right.
who you're writing for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of authors, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. A lot of them, especially newer ones, they need to realize you're not writing for yourself. You're writing for the reader. So you have to think in that mindset. Yeah, you get your story down. Yeah, you get your idea. But when you go back and do, you know, a read-through, think about that. Think about being a reader and not the author, because you're not writing for yourself. You're writing for the reader.
Very true. Very true.
Mm-hmm.
The
only ones that are writing for themselves are the ones that never plan on publishing. You know,
that's true.
Right.
And then you write whatever you want to on there. But
that's called a diary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So, what are your future plans?
My future plans?
Yeah, what is in the near future? Yeah.
What's got in the
work? What is in the near future? Well, like I said, I love to have the opportunity to talk about the online course that I am working on right now that I plan on launching in March.
Sure.
The tentative launch date
absolutely.
Is March 3rd. And it's going to be, it's called How to Write a Novel, plain and simple. It's just going to cover all the steps, and I've done market research. I've picked the brains of about 7 authors so far. As far as what do they want to know? Like what, when you're sitting down to write a book, what do you need to know? And I'm combined that with all my years of experience. And I've spent the last 6 months working on this online course, of how to write a novel. And it's going to go 3 modules. One is what to do before you start writing. The second is while you write. And the third is what you do when you're done writing. And it's gonna be affordable, and there, and even if you can't afford it, it's gonna have payment plan options. And the big thing is, though, to plug really quickly, if people would sign up for my email, the email newsletter thing, that's how you're gonna find out about the launch of the course, and you're gonna get the discounts, you're gonna get free videos, and those kind of things. So that's in the near future, and you can do that by going to my website. I'm sure somewhere we'll plug that, but.
Right now. Go ahead.
It's Top Shelf Edits, and that's EDITS.com. And just go to the contact page and sign up. Top Shelf Edits is because Top Shelf Editing was taken. Apparently, there was already someone else that had that idea. But that is in the future. And then I just would like to grow the editing part of my business a little bit more to the point where I've got a couple interns that they really want to step up and be editors, and they're about ready. I'd like to be at a place where I have a staff of editors, and I don't have to actually do the editing anymore. I can focus on the coaching, and I can focus on the other aspects of my business. So, but the biggest future enterprise is definitely the online course. So,
on your online course, do you have subtitles on it on the 3 different parts?
Oh, yeah.
You have a table of contents?
It'll be an average of 5 to 10 lessons under each module. So, like module 1, before you start writing, there will be 5 to 10 lessons, and the first, like, for example, will be, like, decide on a story. That's the first one. Second one is decide on your goals for this book. You know, another one might be decide on your theme. And then you move over into module 2, which is going to be the actual writing of the book, and that's where we'll have different lessons. One will be on character development, one's on pacing, the other's on flow, the other's on setting. Everything you can think of is covered in the as you write section. And then the after you write, we're going to cover, you know, how to work with an editor, how to write a blurb for your back cover, those kind of things. So, yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you asked that. There are 3 main modules, but several lessons underneath each one.
Are you also going to, on that, after you edit or after you finish the book, is it also going to have a marketing part of it, or is it?
I've got one lesson on marketing.
Because is one of the biggest problems that most authors have, is they do not know how to market afterwards.
I know. Well, I do have one lesson on it that'll be brief, but I also have several courses planned in the future. So this one focuses more on just the general, what do you need to know to write a book? And then I plan on doing a course in the future that focuses more heavily on marketing, and then one that focuses more heavily on the actual publishing aspect. So, yeah, there will be a future course that will dive a lot deeper into marketing, but yes, I am going to touch on it and some of the useful tips and tricks that I've learned, and some great software that you can use. And like King Sumo, for example, I grew my email list in 48 hours from 200 to 897 using King Sumo.
Nice.
So things like that I'll discuss in the course, like little tips and tricks they can use to help market their book and grow their email list and things like that. So, yeah, we'll get into some of that.
Okay.
Very cool.
And does this cover all genres?
Yeah, I'm going to it's a very general fiction. I do talk a little bit about if you're doing nonfiction, you'd want to do it this way, you know. And I do some specific examples within each lesson, like if I'm talking about point of view, for example, like we mentioned earlier, how contemporary romances now tend to have the dual POV. I kind of touch on that a little bit, and then I'll shift over and say, but in a thriller, you know, it's more popular right now to do multiple POV. So I kind of touch on just about every genre, the main genres that are out there throughout the whole course. But as far as the course itself in general terms, is just mainly fiction, just in general.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more about the bolts of writing a book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, keep us posted as that goes live. Yeah, we will share that, and please let us know when you do have that live so we can share the links. Yeah, because we'll definitely put that in our channels for you. Because I tell you, education is so needed by so many authors today.
I know.
Holly and I could talk for hours on it, but yeah, it's what you're doing is valuable and needed, and it makes people like Holly and myself, it makes our lives so much easier when we have an author come to us that you know has that kind of
I don't know why y'all want your lives to be any easier than what they are right now.
I know, right? I mean, we just are so bored.
Yeah, twiddling our thumbs. Yeah. Christina knows the pain we go through. She knows.
Yeah.
So we got Michael Nost in the chat room now. Oh my God.
From
Bram Stoker, award-winning editor and author Michael Nost is in the chat room.
The Nost master.
Yes.
Not
we'll give a shout
house.
Out to him while we're here because I'm the only co-host that's in the chat room, so I'm the only one at seeing this right now. But, but definitely, and I know he would agree with a lot of what we're talking about right now because he deals
definitely.
A lot of the same issues on his end and he does some phenomenal authors retreats and workshop series out. Where he is, where they work on like I said, addressing some of those issues that Christina was speaking of. But back to you, Christina.
Sure.
So the online course begins in March, and so that's obviously going to roll out. What's going on beyond that as far as appearances or anything you got going on in that type of area?
Well, I was very kindly invited to speak at the Imaginarium this year.
Of course.
So that'll be when is that again? I don't have my planner in front of me. Remind everybody.
July 10 to 12. And
July
don't feel
10,
bad because the great Tony Acree, forgot the dates of Imaginarium today when I was talking to him. So even the best forget this.
Shame.
He's our Toastmaster. He's our Toastmaster. So there you go. No shame.
Imaginarium. I'm talking to the people at Killer Nashville about doing. I've done panels for them in the past. I may be showing up and doing a panel on the Killer. I usually do the courtroom, like legal thriller type topics. So I'll probably do that.
Oh, neat. Daniel,
that's
like that.
Live appearances. Yeah, that's live appearances so far. But I also am going to be. I'm scheduled
are
about
you
going to
be at Killer Nashville?
Yeah, I'm always there. Yeah.
There you go, Daniel.
2019 is the only year I didn't go.
We know each other.
I'm sure we do. Yeah,
You've probably met.
I'm sure we have.
I'm the freak in the top hat and all black.
I thought okay, I mentioned earlier. You were at Imaginarium, weren't you?
I go to Killer Nashville every year, too.
Okay. Yep. I think I do know who you are. Yes. You've got a very trademark look.
You can never forget Daniel.
Yes. I think I honestly do know exactly who you are. But that's live appearances. I'm actually also more than live appearances. I'm doing a lot of guest blog posts. And podcasts and things like that this year. I've I just got done reporting for Rebel Author, and then got two more scheduled. I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but I've done a guest blog post for Jane Friedman, as I said earlier. I've got one on Joanna Penn's website coming out in April.
Nice, Payne nice. Wiley. I love Joanna Penn.
Yeah. And you know what? It's great because my website analyst told me that every time I've done a guest blog post, our views on the website just skyrocket. It's a great way for authors to get authors or anybody to get recognition. So I would recommend that to, since we're talking about it, to authors, guest interviews and things like that. They really do help you get exposure. Like, and I try to do author interviews.
Yeah, because people will look you up.
Yeah. So yep. I try to do author interviews with indie authors even on my blog posts, and that does help. So I would highly recommend for authors to try to get themselves out there and get these guest blog posts and interviews and things like that. It really does help.
But yeah, so I often emphasize, I've participated in many blog tours over the course of my life, and that's what I've always emphasized to authors is that, you know, you don't necessarily look at them like a lightning bolt for sales, but what they do is they really do raise awareness of you and your platform and everything else and help people discover you. And so, yeah, doing the circuit on blogs and stuff is invaluable. I mean, I think that's excellent advice. And, thank you for mentioning that, because I have a hard time getting in that into many authors' heads. it's how important it is to do those. Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing you can do is ask, and the worst they can say is no, you know.
That's right.
Both of my parents are certified project managers. They're very left-brain people, and they're very highly organized, and they're all into business and all this stuff. And they kind of taught me that growing up, like, just, you know, if you want to do something, try it. If you want to be somewhere, ask, you know. The worst thing to say is no.
And yeah, that's our philosophy, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I write everybody. I write so many people, and I was like, well, they either tell me no, you know, or not, you know, if you want to be a guest, you know, I write all kinds of people, and I'm like, well, they ain't going, you know, they ain't going to take my birthday. Yeah. They can either tell me yes or no, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah,
and what happens is you do find out that there are some that say yes. So once you kind of go get that in your head, it's a good process. Yeah.
Good. Just be prepared for the yes though. Whatever you've asked.
That's right.
Yeah,
be prepared for it.
That's true. That is very true. That's a good point. Very good point. Now we're coming up on about 7 minutes left in the show here, so I do want to give you some time to definitely tell people how to find you and Top Shelf Editing and all. So let's go ahead and cover that right now as far as where people can find you. Yes, your website again.
Okay.
Anything.
Okay. Well, the best way to find me is I do have an author website, but honestly, I've neglected it over the years with this Top Shelf Editing. But my books can be found on Amazon now at this point. They used to be on shelves, but it's been some years. The Flesh and Blood trilogy is on Amazon, and it includes the first book in the series is my award-winning book, Like Father, Like Daughter. And then I have five or six other standalones that are all somehow fall into the suspense category, and they all have some variation on the legal fiction bend because my career for 22 years was as a paralegal. So I kind of had that naturally ingrained in me. So all my books kind of involve a courtroom scene or a trial or something like that. So that's on the book side. As far as the business, as we said earlier, the website, you can always find me on my website, which is topshelfedits.com. And if you can't remember the email, which is really easy, it's just info@topshelfedits.com. Just go to the contact page, and you can reach out through there. There's a form. You can even say, how did you find me? What are you wanting to know? How can I help you? And fill out that form on my contact page. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a consistent handle across all my social media because there was apparently another Top Shelf Editing somewhere in the world. Facebook is Top Shelf Editing LLC. Instagram is Top Shelf Editing, and Twitter is Top Shelf Edit. So I know if you put in Top Shelf, you're going to find me pretty much at this point. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to reach me across all channels, in all honesty. And I want to encourage authors or anybody who's listening, do reach out. You don't have to be asking me to hire me as an editor. I answer questions all the time. If you just want advice, if you just want to know, hey, I'm stuck on this one thing, how should I do it? Just send me an email. You're never bothering me. I mean, it may take me a day to get back to you, but I just want to encourage people to feel like they can reach out to me anytime for any reason. It doesn't have to be about my services. So.
Mm-hmm.
So you, say it's topshelfedit.com?
Edit with an S, E-D-I-T-S. Top Shelf
okay.
Edit.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. Top Shelf Edit without the S is not coming up right now. So.
Yeah.
it's
plural.
Right.
And it's plural. Yes.
Yeah,
topshelfedits.com. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I've been on that site. Very nice site.
Thank you. I have to give my website designer, Nicole Tuxbury. She's with Love, Live, and Hustle. She did that website for me. She's an amazing. She's good at author branding. She's trying to branch out her business right now and focus on working on author websites too. So I'll give her a little shout
out
there because she did do a great job. She did do a great job.
I might have to, look into her services, yeah, because that's something that, yeah, I even
no,
want
yeah,
need,
help.
Need to explore.
Help, yeah.
Yeah. She's trying to build her business, too, so she would gladly help you. Just send me a message, remind me, and I'll send you her info.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely will.
That's one thing off of our plate. Yeah, that'd be great.
So you mentioned your online course, but is there anything else in the last few minutes of the show that we have not covered yet that you would like to make sure we spotlight?
No, I mean, it's a little thing, but another thing that people don't really realize that I do we don't just do editing through Top Shelf. We also, and coaching, we also do original taglines, slogans, and we do write blurbs for back covers.
Very cool.
And we write them. So between me and my staff, we've helped authors come up with slogans and taglines, Twitter pitches, for the pitch party. We do all that.
Yep.
So that's just something. It's on my website, but it's something that just doesn't get discussed very much. So I guess I would throw that out there as a little extra bonus if anybody needs, because a lot of authors, they need a slogan for their website or whatever. And they're hard. It's hard. It's easier sometimes to write a 90,000-word novel than it is a four-word phrase, For whatever reason, sometimes that's true. So we do provide that service as well for anybody who's interested. But same thing, just reach
out
to the
contact
page. I try.
Mm-hmm.
I try really hard.
No, you are, like I said, multifaceted, and it's a good thing, and I love how, you yourself as a creative, so what creatives go through. So it's like, you bring a full perspective to it.
Yeah, and that's what I always tell people. I'm like, I'm not trying to put myself above any other editor because there's some amazing editors out there. But the good thing about me is I do know. I'm an author. I know your struggles. I know what you're worried about. I know what you're struggling with. I know what you're, So it does help, I think, sometimes for them to identify with me as an author and an editor. So
very cool. All right. Well, we've had a wonderful visit with you tonight.
A
lot of info, a lot of tips, a lot of helpful information.
Yeah, I've had a great time.
Yep. Thank you for coming on.
I'm glad we finally got to talk with you.
The listeners, I can't wait to see everybody at Imaginarium this year. That'd be great.
I know.
Yeah, you help us break in our new home, and it's first class. You're gonna love it. We've grown this from the grassroots, and now we've got a first rate home. So I mean, it's gonna be a neat year, and lucky seven, as I call it. Hopefully, seventh year, and we got a great home. Yeah. So we will definitely see you there, but. Yeah, next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, we will have another Star Chamber show, live podcast. But tonight, we're wrapping it up. And so I am signing off, and I will let Christina say goodbye, followed by Holly and Daniel. This is Stephen. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
And like every week, we want you to be creative. Be creative every day until we talk again next week. This is Daniel Dark signing off.